This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
Okay, let's unpack this. If I asked you to picture, you know, the ultimate quintessential Korean meal, you are probably imagining a grill right in the center of your table, just sizzling with marinated beef, or maybe like a bubbling, fiery red stew that completely stains your chopsticks.
Oh yeah, definitely. That's the standard image, right?
Exactly. But our sources today are pointing us toward a dish that is arguably the most widely consumed, structurally complex item in the everyday Korean diet. And here's the kicker. It doesn't have a single drop of chili paste.
Not a drop.
Right. It contains zero meat, and it relies entirely on this kind of acoustic architectural perfection.
So welcome back to another deep dive. Today, we are tearing into a stack of production and culinary notes about gimbap, which is also spelled K-I-S-I-M-B-A-P.
Yeah, and I have to say, it is the absolute definition of an everyday staple, but it's one that is completely misunderstood when you view it through the typical lens of, like, global food media.
Oh, totally. We are going to look really closely at these culinary facts today to just strip this famous dish down to its absolute mechanics. Like, we are looking at what it is, the surprisingly precise science of how it's made, and why its structural adaptability is its defining feature.
And the context our sources provide right out of the gate is crucial for you to understand. Like, if you really want to understand gimbap, you have to recognize exactly where it sits in the culinary hierarchy.
Right. Categorization is everything here.
The notes are definitive on this. It belongs firmly and strictly in the rice category. I mean, it's not a vegetable wrap. It's not some sushi variation. It is fundamentally a rice dish.
And that categorization, that is really the skeleton key to the whole dish. In Korean cuisine, meals are often structured around rice as the sort of gravitational center, right?
Okay.
With all the side dishes or banchan just orbiting around it, gimbap basically takes that entire sprawling solar system of a meal and compresses it into a single portable cylinder.
Wow, okay. That's a great way to picture it.
But the rice is still the sun. So your goal today, as you're listening, isn't just to learn a recipe. It's to understand the specific target flavor and the highly engineered texture you have to achieve to make that compression actually work.
Which brings up a detail in the profile that honestly totally defies those spicy stereotypes you might associate with Korean food. The spice level is explicitly labeled in our sources as mild.
Very mild.
And I look at the rice category label and I understand it as a foundation, sure. But I have to push back here for a second. I mean, if we are talking about just mild rice, doesn't that risk being incredibly flat?
Well,
like, if you take away the heat, the fermented chili paste, the heavy garlic, what exactly is this target flavor we are aiming for?
So what's fascinating here is how easily we conflate mild with flavorless.
Oh, interesting.
Right. In a cuisine globally renowned for these bold, fermented, aggressive profiles, a mild dish serves a very deliberate purpose. It's almost a palate reset.
Okay, I can see that.
But mechanically, because you don't have a heavy chili paste to hide behind, every single element has to be perfectly calibrated. You are relying entirely on the harmony of the core ingredients.
It's like acoustic music versus an electric guitar solo.
Oh, I like
that. Yeah, like with an acoustic set, if a single string is out of tune, you hear it immediately. There's no distortion pedal to cover up a mistake.
That is a brilliant way to frame it, honestly. The acoustic nature of gimbap means the target flavor is actually a structural flavor. Let's look at how that rice is seasoned, for example.
Okay.
Unlike Japanese maki, which uses a very sharp, acidic mixture of vinegar and sugar to season the rice, gimbap relies primarily on toasted sesame oil and salt.
Right, which completely changes the chemical profile of the bite.
Exactly. The toasted sesame oil provides this deep, comforting, nutty umami, but it also does something crucial mechanically.
Oh, what's that?
It coats the individual rice grains in a very thin layer of lipids.
A lipid barrier.
Yes. That fat barrier prevents the grains from absorbing too much moisture from the vegetable fillings, which, you know, stops the rice from turning into mush. So the target flavor isn't about blowing your palate away. It's about a balanced, savory richness that maintains the structural chew of the rice.
So the seasoning itself is literally an architectural defense mechanism.
This really is.
And the seaweed, the gim in gimbap, that has to bring that subtle, savory ocean note to just wrap it all together. And then the fillings provide the crunch, the saltiness, maybe a slight pickled sweetness.
Yeah.
It's a completely engineered bite.
Yes, exactly. The acoustic harmony you mentioned relies entirely on that structural integrity, which is why the preparation of this dish is such a fascinating topic to dissect today.
And here's where it gets really interesting for you listening at home.
Yeah.
Because if that structure is so delicate, the actual cooking process has to be a minefield.
Oh, it is.
The sources present this massive paradox here. They give gimbap an easy difficulty rating with an estimated prep time of just 30 minutes. And, I mean, 30 minutes sounds like a breeze. But the source material is incredibly adamant about warning us against common mistakes that home cooks make. So if it's just an easy 30-minute dish, why are there so many red flags about ruining it?
Well, it's the paradox of simple food, you know?
Also,
think of a classic French omelet.
Oh, yeah.
It takes 3 minutes and 3 ingredients. But executing a perfect one is a test of sheer culinary technique. In a 30-minute recipe where the name dictates the primary ingredients, you know, gim meaning seaweed, bap meaning rice, precision is absolutely everything. The execution separates a great dish from a disaster.
Because there's nowhere to hide. So what are the specific mechanics of these common mistakes? The warnings in the sources seem to heavily point toward the physical handling of the food.
They absolutely do. Specifically regarding thermodynamics.
Thermodynamics.
Yeah.
For a rice roll.
Yes. Let's look at the temperature of the rice. When you only have 30 minutes, you might be tempted to just pull the rice straight from the cooker and immediately spread it onto the seaweed.
Which sounds super efficient, but I'm guessing that's a structural disaster.
It is a total collapse.
Mm-hmm.
Hot rice releases a massive amount of steam.
Right.
And dried seaweed, the gim, has a very specific crispy cellular structure. When that steam hits the dried porphyra, which is the type of algae used, it instantly rehydrates it.
Oh, no.
Yeah, cellular walls break down, and the seaweed just wilts. It turns into this chewy, unyielding, soggy mess that you can barely even bite through.
Ah, so you lose the clean snap. But okay, if hot rice is a mistake, you can't just use cold leftover rice from the fridge either, right?
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
And that's because of a process called retrogradation.
Retrogradation. Okay, what is that?
When cooked rice gets cold, the starch molecules crystallize.
Yeah.
The rice hardens, it loses its stickiness, and it just won't spread evenly. If you try to force cold rice across a delicate sheet of seaweed, you'll just tear the seaweed to shreds, or you'll end up with these dense clumps of hard grains.
So you have this incredibly tight window. The target texture requires the rice to be exactly body temperature. Warm enough to spread cleanly and activate the aroma of the sesame oil, but cool enough that it doesn't steam cook the seaweed.
Exactly. You have a 30-minute window to execute a really delicate balancing act of temperature, moisture, and compression.
Ah, the rolling.
Right. And that compression is the final hurdle. If you roll the bamboo mat too loosely, the ingredients aren't bound together and the whole thing just falls apart when you try to slice it.
But if you roll it too tight, you mash those perfectly lipid-coated rice grains into a dense paste. You destroy the texture.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes total sense. So the easy rating in our sources, it's about the accessibility of the ingredients and the lack of complex cooking techniques like braising or deep frying. But it requires intense mindfulness.
You are respecting the core physics of the dish.
Well, if the physics of the rice and the seaweed are that rigid, how does this structure hold up if you don't have the exact right traditional vegetables in your fridge? Like, let's say you're listening to this in Ohio or London or Buenos Aires. Does the whole dish fall apart if you swap out the fillings?
This raises an important question. And the notes in our sources provide a remarkably revealing answer about the true nature of gimbap.
They really do. And it leads directly to the dish's incredible adaptability. We have to dissect the dietary parameters detailed in these notes because they completely reframe how we should look at authenticity.
But really do.
Listen to this baseline profile from our sources. Does the core recipe contain pork? No.
Yeah.
Beef? No. Chicken? No. Seafood? No. It explicitly accommodates a vegetarian diet right out of the gate.
A completely meatless baseline.
Right. And furthermore, the sources explicitly encourage what they call overseas cooking alternatives or ingredient substitutions. I look at this, and to me, gimbap is essentially open source software.
Open source software. I love that.
Yeah, think about it. The rice and the seaweed, that structural physics we just talked about, that is your operating system. You can download that OS anywhere in the world, and the fillings are just the local apps you plug into it.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, that analogy works perfectly because it highlights that the absence of meat isn't some modern plant-based diet trend bleeding into a traditional recipe.
No.
It is a highly practical feature.
Right, because why wouldn't a culture that loves grilled meats put meat in their most popular portable meal?
Exactly. You have to consider the use case here. Gimbap is designed for travel. It's for picnics, train rides, school lunches.
Right, sitting in a backpack?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It sits at room temperature for hours.
Ow.
Historically, and even today, meat and seafood spoil incredibly fast under those conditions. A meatless baseline isn't a vegetarian crusade. It's a brilliant solution for shelf life and food safety.
Wow, yeah.
By relying on things like pickled radishes, blanched spinach, and carrots, the dish remains stable without refrigeration.
That makes so much sense. The lack of meat is literally a survival mechanism for the food itself.
It is. And by actively encouraging overseas cooks to use substitutions, the sources are proving a crucial point about the philosophy of this specific food. The essence of gimbap is not tied to a strict, dogmatic grocery list. You don't have to prove your culinary worth by tracking down one highly specific Korean root vegetable at an import store.
As long as your apps don't crash the operating system.
Exactly.
If we go back to the physics of the roll, the substitutions just have to respect the structural code, right?
Correct. You have to manage the moisture and the crunch. If you decide to substitute a traditional pickled radish with, say, a juicy raw tomato, you are going to introduce way too much water.
Oh, yeah, that sounds messy.
It is. The lipid barrier of the sesame oil will fail, the seaweed will dissolve, and the roll will just collapse.
But if you use local carrots, cucumbers, maybe lightly sauteed mushrooms, or a firm pickled local vegetable that you've squeezed the excess moisture out of, the system runs perfectly.
Exactly. The universal binder is the rice. As long as you maintain that mild, balanced flavor profile, and as long as you execute the preparation with respect to the rice's temperature and the compression of the roll, you are making authentic gimbap. The structural integrity is the authenticity.
That completely demystifies the cooking process. You just open your fridge, analyze your vegetables for the moisture content and crunch factor, and plug them into the open source code. It elevates the home cook from just following a recipe to actually engineering a meal.
And it proves that adaptability isn't just some westernized concession, you know. It's deeply rooted in how the food is consumed daily in Korea. You use what you have.
Which forces us to look at the broader implications here. Having established what this dish is, this mild, perfectly engineered, open source rice roll and the science of how to build it, we need to address the final mandate of our source material. The sources specifically instruct us to look at what this single dish teaches you about Korean food as a whole.
Right. What are the broader cultural lessons we can extract from this?
Well, the sources emphasize knowing when to eat it. They frame it as a highly practical, everyday food. But the detail that really stood out to me is that the production notes explicitly warn against making up fake histories or claiming like unproven medical benefits about the dish.
Which is a highly specific, very deliberate instruction for a culinary profile, isn't it?
Yeah, very deliberate. So what does this all mean? Why do the sources feel the need to tell us not to invent a grand, mythic backstory? If gimbap wasn't, I don't know, handed down by an ancient king on a mountaintop, and it doesn't possess magical healing properties, why is it the perfect lens for you to understand the reality of Korean food?
It provides a much-needed grounding perspective. We see this all the time. Global food media loves to sell international cuisines by wrapping them in mysticism. It's essentially a form of culinary orientalism.
Right, the whole superfood marketing angle.
Right.
Like, every Asian dish is supposedly an ancient secret for immortality.
Exactly. We see articles claiming a certain spice blend will cure all your ailments, or that a specific noodle was eaten by warriors to gain superhuman strength. It's exhausting, it's reductive, and frankly, it's almost always entirely fictional.
Right.
The calm truth here is that true culinary culture isn't always about ancient palace dining or mystical health fads.
It's food for the actual world.
Yes. By stripping away the fake history, and by stripping away the heavy reliance on luxury ingredients like meat, gimbap represents something much more profound. It represents the pragmatic, hyper-adaptable survival and convenience of daily life. It teaches us that Korean food is deeply rooted in resourcefulness.
You eat it when you need a meal on the go. You eat it when you have leftover rice and a few vegetables in the crisper drawer that need to be used up. It doesn't need to cure a disease to be valuable.
It just needs to be a reliable, comforting meal that brings a perfect harmony of mild flavors and satisfying textures into your day. The value is in its utility and its harmony, not in some manufactured backstory.
It's a humble dish, But as we've seen with the physics of the rice and the seaweed, it demands absolute respect in its execution.
And that humility combined with technical precision is precisely why it is such an enduring pillar of the rice category. It doesn't shout for attention with extreme spice. It simply works beautifully every time you apply the right method.
Okay, let's quickly recap the mechanical and cultural journey we've just taken with these sources. We started by breaking the expectation that all Korean food is fiery and meat-heavy.
Right.
We found out that gimbap is a strictly categorized rice dish that relies on the mild acoustic umami of toasted sesame oil rather than heavy chili pastes.
And we learned that its 30-minute prep time is actually a thermodynamic balancing act. It demands intense focus on the temperature of the rice, avoiding the steam that wilts the seaweed and the retrogradation that hardens cold grains, all to achieve its target texture.
We discovered that it is the ultimate open-source culinary architecture. With a meatless baseline designed for room temperature stability, it actively encourages local substitutions. It proves that its true identity lies in mastering moisture and crunch, rather than rigidly adhering to a dogmatic ingredient list.
Very true.
And finally, we saw how its lack of frayed history makes it a beautiful symbol of practical, everyday resourcefulness.
It really is a masterful piece of culinary engineering. Thank you for walking through this structural breakdown. It really proves how much depth and science there is in a seemingly simple roll of rice and seaweed.
Oh, the depth is incredible. It completely changed how I look at the vegetables sitting in my fridge right now. And for you listening, we want to leave you with one final thought as you step out of this deep dive and maybe into your own kitchen. We talked a lot about those overseas substitutions and how this dish is defined by its architectural form and texture rather than a strict traditional grocery list. So consider this. If the true spirit of gimbap is adaptability and utilizing what you have on hand to create a perfectly engineered, mild harmony, could the most authentic way to honor the spirit of this Korean classic actually be to fill it entirely with ingredients native to your own hometown?
This program is provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim.